Okay, ready?
Yeah, let's get started.
Hello and welcome back to the Hen House. I'm Michaela.
And I'm Emily.
And I'm a farmer.
And I'm not a farmer.
And today we have a special guest.
This is our third guest, right?
Yep. We had Kelly, yep. Lauren, and now Curtis.
Which we are going to introduce to you. We're going to tell you a little bit about what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah. So Curtis, Stefan, Lauren, and I actually all grew up in the same town and we went to the same high school. But it wasn't until the company I work for was looking to hire a new employee that Curtis and I really crossed paths. He started working for us about 3 years ago, and his friendship with Lauren and the farm and I have really just grown from there. He's a master angler and an avid hunter, so we wanted to get him on here to talk about what he's most passionate about, harvesting meat in the wild.
Welcome, Curtis. Hi.
Welcome,
Thanks
Curtis.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it for sure.
No, that's awesome. Anyways, you are the second male, the second rooster to be in our hen house. How does that feel?
It's an honor. It's an honor.
It better be.
Yeah.
Just kidding. okay, before we kind of get into things, why don't you introduce yourself? What's your name? What do you do? What's your favorite color? I don't know, just something. Tell us about yourself. Like, give us a little bit. Name, age, job, that kind of stuff.
For sure. So my name's James Curtis Percy. I've been told to add the first name in.
Wait, pause. Say that again.
Let's do the full
James,
name.
Jimmy.
No, but we need your full given
James
name.
Curtis. What's on your Francis Percy?
Two middle names. So you go by your middle name?
I do.
And yeah. Was that just like because?
That's apparently a Lanark County thing. That's pretty common.
Okay.
I don't know.
So on your license, it has James Curtis
Francis
Percy.
The full handle. Yeah.
Holy. Yeah. Have you ever counted how many letters that is?
No, I really don't want to be
They're
honest.
They're all short.
I guess. Well, not Francis.
I guess, but it's under seven.
And Curtis.
Like, think about my last name. I basically have two middle names.
Yeah, you do. Yours would be long. Yours probably the font shrinks on the second line. Anyways, okay, so your name is James Curtis
Francis Percy. And yes. What do you do for a living?
Yeah, what do you do for a living?
So I work at Sideshift. So I work for one small branch of the Hool clan. it's a very large clan for sure. So I also, in my spare time, I enjoy hunting and fishing quite a lot.
Nice.
I think that's one of the reasons why I'm here today.
that is the only reason. No, I'm just kidding.
But yeah, other than that, I'm married and, I have a dog named Tucker.
Oh, and little what's your wife's Tucker. Name?
My wife's name is Jenna.
Nice.
Yeah, Curtis, I should have mentioned that first.
That's a cute little family. Yeah, you introduced the dog's name first. Yeah.
You guys can't see, but Curtis is actually repping a Sideshift shirt straight from work.
Logo so. Wear.
Sideshift. Yeah. Doc like a pro.
You got it. You got it.
I could do your voice ads for you.
And I think every time we have a male on here, we always think, like, we realize the octave of our voices.
Yeah.
This is such a stark contrast. It was the same thing with Lauren. So if we have screechy voices, I mean, sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry about that. We were saying Curtis has a nice podcast voice. Yeah. He could, like, read a bedtime story.
Yeah. So we want to ask Curtis about...
Oh, yes. Okay, so in Michaela's little blurb that she said, she called you a master angler. What the heck is that?
So that was kind of an inside joke almost, okay. Or a running joke. So we don't actually have a master angler program in Ontario, but I believe it was either Manitoba or Saskatchewan that had that program. And it was essentially if you catch a certain fish that's over a certain length, mm-hmm. you qualify as a master angler.
Oh, what the heck?
So you
That's
can
cool.
register it as a master angler fish. So unfortunately, Ontario does not have that program.
Boo.
If anyone's listening, they can make that happen. They should.
Have at her.
It was essentially just me and a friend of mine, Jesse, would kind of say this to another friend because we both had walleye that were in excess of 28 inches, which qualify for the master angler program in Manitoba. So just so a running joke.
If you were to catch it in Manitoba, you could actually have the title.
Yes.
Master Angler.
Indeed, I could.
Do you get a plaque?
I don't know. I hope so.
A tattoo?
I really hope so, for sure.
So is it any fish species?
So it depends on the species, and then there's individual lengths set out for each species. Of course,
like if you catch a... Is there a sunfish master angler?
I believe there actually is.
Really?
Yes.
Is there a minnow one?
depending on the species of minnow, there might be.
Oh, okay. Then I could be a master angler then.
Not in Ontario.
Wow. Okay. So it's an inside joke, but you've self-proclaimed that title.
Yeah.
I like it. No, it's good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I love the confidence. Okay. So you said when you're not working, you haven't really said this yet, but you said you love to hunt and fish. Is that all you do in your spare time?
When I can. Yeah. There's obviously like certain seasons where you can't. But other than that, I just, you know, I also enjoy inside life, you know. I like video gaming and
nice.
Just being a potato.
Yeah, you're just rounded individual.
You exercise like all your too, you know, you gotta like a little bit of exercise here.
Yeah, you're into cycling, right?
Yeah, and potatoing also.
Me too.
Yeah.
Just gotta a round it. Potato.
Yeah. Yep, gotta have it for sure.
That's cool. Okay. Quick question. Do you prefer hunting or fishing?
That is a loaded question for sure. So there's a little bit of overlap in the seasons about this time of year. So duck is set to open pretty much, I think, 10 days from now. Exactly. Wow. So fishing is still technically open.
Okay.
But it does kind of go on the back burner for me, for sure.
Okay.
Just because, waterfowl hunting is a huge passion for sure. And I just spend the most time I can doing that.
Nice. So do you mostly hunt waterfowl, you'd say?
Yeah, that's like literally 98%.
And like, let's define waterfowl.
Yeah, I was going to say, dumb question. What is that?
Yeah, for sure. So if it flies and lands on water, essentially.
So like, a duck.
So yeah, ducks, geese. I haven't personally hunted them, but gallinule and coots as well.
I've never heard of those last two.
I should add cormorant in there, although it's not really something you can eat. But Ontario has actually, I don't know what specifically to word it as, but they essentially want them eradicated because they're polluters.
Gross.
Yeah, and there's an overabundance of the species as well. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to specifically be engaging in that, but
it's not. And
there's
calling.
Waterfowl you can't hunt too, right? Like swans.
Yeah,
specifically would be classified as waterfowl.
Okay.
Yep. Swans, depending on your area, there's different regulations. But like, yeah, swans is a big no for sure. Loon. Also is waterfowl,
right,
but
they'd be protected or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. Also, believe it or not, seagulls spend a lot of their time in and around the water.
Yeah.
And you can't do
what?
That either. Yeah, seagulls is
but
a
they're
big
annoying.
No-no. Yeah, they are. They're also protected. They're also like a specific.
Seagulls are protected, but they're French fry stealers.
They are. They love French fries.
Why
sure.
would they be protected? Like,
yeah, do you know
that
why?
Is a great question for someone who knows the answer, but unfortunately, that is not me.
Maybe Google.
Yeah.
We'll ask Google later.
Yeah. That is a good call.
We'll put it in the burn pile.
Yes. We'll mention it next week.
Yeah.
Why are seagulls protected?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Under
we'll add it to the list.
What did you call it?
Waterfowl?
Foul. Yeah.
Yeah. Just under some sort of protection act sort of thing, I believe.
So let's go back to hunting and fishing. Did somebody when did you get introduced to this kind of world of hunting and fishing? Like, did somebody introduce you to it, or did you kind of just get into it yourself?
So since I was pretty much able to stand on my own and hold a fishing rod, I've been fishing.
Really?
The hunting part kind of came in later. And I'd say it's like through a little bit of family. I had like my dad used to hunt, but he didn't hunt so much when I was alive. Mm. After I was born. Sorry, weird terminology
when
there.
When I was
alive. Still am alive. But like I had aunts and uncles that would hunt.
Okay.
And that was a big thing. We used to go over to their house. They used to have like full mounts of deer and stuff. And that'd be pretty cool. Especially when you're a kid.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
cool stuff. But
the fridge in the basement or in the garage was full.
Like, yeah. Always full for sure. Venison was on the menu.
Yum.
a big thing also was just like friends when I was growing up, like in high school, they were big into it sort of thing. And it's just something we could share together. But
nice.
Yeah, always been into the outdoors more so. Yeah. The indoors kind of came actually a little later in my life.
Like, so it kind of started off as a hobby. It turned more into like a sport, like, or a way to like feed yourself. Yeah. Like, would you say that's fair?
I would say, honestly, with the fishing portion, more so when I was a kid, I didn't even like eating fish when I was a kid.
Really?
Unless it was battered and fried, I didn't
really
eat it. Yeah. And
now you like it?
Oh, yeah. Love it. Love it. It's one of my main sources of protein for sure.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Taste buds change, I guess.
They do drastically, as we find out. But yeah.
I like grilled cheese now. When I was a kid, I didn't used to like grilled cheese or pancakes, but I liked waffles.
The one thing I didn't like as a child was peas, and I still don't
I still don't like peas. I'm with you, girl. Yeah. I hate peas.
Yeah, I think it's a texture thing. I don't mind vegetable. The flavor too much. Texture's weird.
Oh, it's both texture and flavor. Oh, I used to hide them under my plate when I was little.
Okay, so Mounts. Sorry, Mom and Dad. I know the answer to this, but I think Emily's going to be curious because Curtis and I work together. So I mean, believe it or not, we talk about a lot of these things like that happen in our lives. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But okay. Emily's going to be interested into this. Let's talk about mounts and what you have.
I do currently. I have one mount on my wall. It is a very large mallard drake that I shot late last season. And it was just beautiful bird. And I was like, you know, could turn that into some art. So,
and you were the one who did it?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say.
Well, I didn't like taxidermy it.
No,
myself,
no. Yeah. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes.
Does it have a name, Curtis?
Bill.
Because it has a bill?
Because it has a bill. You got it.
Wow. So wait, that happened last season?
Late season.
That is so cool.
That's when you start to see like the bigger birds come in, and also like their plumage is much better as well.
Right.
Just because, you know, it's getting cold. So
yeah.
Feathers get a little thicker.
Right.
Yeah.
Were you like, that's the coolest thing I've ever done? Minus marrying your wife. I mean.
Honestly, like on that day, it was kind of like everyone always says you get one day. Well, in waterfowling anyway, you get one day of the season where like the stars just align and it doesn't matter what you're doing. You could be doing everything wrong and the birds are just coming in. Mm-hmm. So we had a very, very large spread of decoys out, and me and two of my friends were literally standing completely out in the open, pretty much breaking every rule of waterfowling. Like we had no blind, standing out on some rocks, like barely in camouflage, just talking, and we had ducks landing nonstop.
Really? That's
pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's I was crazy. The only one that actually lifted my shotgun on this bird, and I just saw a green head and I was like, that'll be good with a little butter and garlic.
So when you taxidermy something, can you eat the meat?
You can, yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, your taxidermist can save the meat for you.
And do you mind me asking, did they?
He did not, actually. Oh. He might have taken it as a tip. To be quite honest, I believe. But as long as it's consumed, that's okay.
Can you talk about the taxidermist, like when you went there to get your bird?
Sure
like,
thing.
Was when you went experience? In and how his place was.
Yeah. So the first thing,
nervous.
So I was directed to this guy from another taxidermist, from Hoots Taxidermy. He directed me to this guy, and I can't actually quote a business name because it's not technically a business.
Oh.
So it was a guy's house, and he just said, well, why don't you come on in and come down in my basement? And I was like, well, I hope I don't end up being taxidermy at the end of this. But anyway, I went down in his basement, and it is quite the workspace. He literally has one of every duck that flies in North America.
Whoa.
In crazy. His basement.
That's crazy. And you're like, I expect mine back. Thank you.
Yeah. Some of them have been gathered from areas where you can't, like, so one of them was from Alaska because you literally can't legally harvest it anywhere except for Alaska.
Wow.
And then some of these birds were from other parts. Some of them were even from the U.S. where these ducks specifically are very rare here. They're rare kind of everywhere. It was a ruddy duck. But during our season, you can't get them in full plumage in the nice colors that they have.
Right.
So this was harvested outside of this country.
So. Random question. How many types of ducks are there? I thought there was the ones with the green heads and then the yellow ones.
Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot. I don't have a specific number, but I mean, even there's like two separate categories of ducks. There's dabbling ducks or puddle ducks, and then there's diver ducks. And within that realm, even they eat very, there's a lot of different ducks.
Like you think what? Over 100?
I honestly could not put a number on it off the top of my head.
I'm going to Google it real quick. Yeah, you should.
That's a great idea.
How many species of ducks are there in North America? That would be a good, we'll see what it comes up with.
Yeah, we'll roll that for sure.
Okay, well, can you define puddle something and diver duck?
Puddle ducks.
While I do this?
So puddlers or dabblers are ducks that actually eat without fully submerging themselves. So they're like shallow water feeders. They eat mostly vegetation, small invertebrates and stuff, depending on the specific duck. Like wood ducks will eat stuff, I believe, like acorns and stuff like that, and different like stuff from trees. Wood ducks actually live in trees. Like in hollowed trees. Ducks. Yeah, it's in the name. It is in the name. But then divers, which I would kind of put into like almost two little subcategories. There's divers that are like fish-eating ducks. So like your mergansers. And then there are divers that dive to eat, but they're eating like tubers underwater and stuff. So
what
like
is a, that? What's a type, tuber?
Almost like a in the potato family kind of thing.
Oh.
And they eat other like aquatic vegetation that it grows a little bit deeper in water. So
interesting.
Yeah, so a lot of people put divers into a separate category. Oh, you know, they're not as good a table fare, but that's more the fish eaters.
Okay,
because,
gotcha.
Yeah, eating fish, well, you get a little fishy taste.
Yeah, no, for sure. It tastes like ocean or lake. Okay, so there's only 29 types of native ducks to North America. Only 29 native ducks.
Okay.
But that's not to say that ones haven't come here.
Right.
And so I couldn't really find that, but at least there's... So I bet you it's probably close to what you
said. There's a good amount, for sure. And there's a lot of ducks out here that I'm not even familiar with, too, because when you get into sea ducks and stuff like that... I like at some point in my life, I'll have an opportunity to hunt them, but you're not going to find those on your like local river here.
Right.
Right.
So,
okay. So let's talk about harvesting animals now. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason we wanted to invite you here is because as a farm, we also harvest animals. But I'm interested to hear some of like the similarities and like differences between harvesting animals in a farm setting versus harvesting animals in the wild. So one of the major differences, I think, like maybe you can speak to this, Curtis, between farmed animals and wild animals is like wild animals, you have to go find them. Like you have to like literally hunt them.
You do. You do.
Yeah.
Versus like the taking care of them.
Or like we purchase animals,
right.
Raise the animals. Like when you're hunting, you're not raising the animals. I mean, I guess unless you have like a pheasant farm or something where you've purchased animals and then are going out there to harvest them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But still I would classify that as like,
that's a good crossover like right
animal
there.
Animal husbandry.
That's a little bit of farming and a little bit of hunting all rolled in one.
Yeah. So we can explain that. Yeah. We'll explain that to Emily. So
please enlighten me.
Somebody can purchase pheasants. Is it just pheasants?
Pheasants, chuckers, bobwhite quail. I think there might be a couple other species of game birds you can do as well.
So just birds, yeah.
Okay.
That you can purchase and make them like some sort of like habitat area. Like they have to have a place to like sleep and stuff. But it's very natural, like, and it's just in the woods.
Right.
And you release them. And then because they are, quote unquote, your, like, animals, you can
like your property.
Hunt them any time of the year.
Yeah, you can hunt them outside of season. So if you go to one of these farms, so it's specifically going to be, like, ground nesting birds.
Right.
Because they don't. All the time, they try to run away most of the time before they try to fly away. Because obviously, good luck if the bird flies and you don't see it.
Yeah.
So you just like they basically write you a receipt essentially for the birds. So you leave there with your meat, and a receipt. It would just be like buying them from a farm, but you've harvested them.
That's so interesting because like with any livestock, it has to walk off of the property. So I guess with that particular farming slash hunting, the animals aren't walking off the property.
No.
I certainly hope not, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, interesting. Do you there's know, like a certain loophole.
Yeah. Do you know a lot of people that do that? Like, and do you have friends that do that? Like,
so we did our first one just because, again, we were kind of, last year was one of the first years that I went completely headfirst into waterfowl, which like is a long season. Like we're talking like end of September till you basically can't get in the water anymore.
Oh wow.
And some people continue past that point as well.
So
we did, like, we broke ice to get into the water a few times. That's actually sometimes some of the best hunting, but whenever you start to see floods of common mergansers, that's when it's over.
Oh, okay.
Unless you like fish eating ducks, but I just skip the middleman and eat the fish.
Right. It's because you do both.
yeah. But we did a pheasant hunt just because we were kind of, it's outside of season. We were waiting for turkey to open at the time, and just got a couple lads together and went and did a pheasant hunt. It was definitely something that I wanted to do. But I mean, it's really not as wild as you think it is.
Yeah. Right.
It's like they go and place the birds like 45 minutes before you go and hunt.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. So, it, you know, it is what it is on that.
It's kind of more like a sport in that way. Like, you know, you're heading up for that, you know, like,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like you're in game mode versus like when you're hunting and you're sitting.
Yeah.
For like hours until you see something. Like, this is kind of like you're already anticipating.
Yeah, it's controlled.
Yeah, it's a controlled like, hunting.
Oh,
controlled.
We put a pheasant underneath that log over there about 45 minutes ago.
They essentially, like, they're running dogs to flush the birds, but essentially they let the dog work the bird.
Right.
But at the end of the day, they know either the brush pile that they literally put them in or that they're going to be within, you know.
Right.
20 yards of that brush pile. Because again, they're ground nesting, so they don't go very far.
Is there, I don't know, maybe, is there like a limit to how many, like, do you do like 20? Do you do like 100? Do you do 5?
As far as
like,
I know, the limit was how many they had.
Oh, at the okay.
Time.
Yeah.
Your bank account is the
right,
limit.
Right, right, okay, I got you, got you. Depending on when you're getting paid.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. No, I was just curious because if it was like, oh, 5, good luck, you know, and they've actually hid the third one, like, and you keep just looking. Or is it like,
we did lose a bird on that hunt because it literally just flew away. It flew through a swampy area that we couldn't get through. And it was like, well.
Mother Nature.
Yeah, something gets to enjoy that other than us. So
that's crazy. So you've hunted pheasant. You said duck.
Yep.
And then what else?
Did you do something with a sea?
I've done geese. And then I've done a lot of small game hunting. That was when I was younger. But like lots of rabbits and stuff like that.
Okay. Definition question. What is considered small game? Sorry.
So any, like squirrel, rabbits,
anything like lower than knee height? Is that kind of, or is it weight?
I don't know if that's the specific guideline, like, but yeah, like, that's the gist of it,
you know,
essentially.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
can you hunt fox?
You can, I believe, but I'm not exactly a predator hunter myself.
Yeah.
I've never done it, so I don't look at the regulations for it.
Right.
But I believe there's a few different predators that you can hunt for sure.
Coyotes being one of them.
Coyotes,
right.
Yeah, is an obvious one for sure, because they can be an issue, especially to farmers, as you probably know.
Yeah.
She's
okay.
Like, don't speak of it.
We've never had a coyote issue, which is
you can just
really
hear them,
good.
Right?
Yeah, we can hear them. Yeah, but we haven't. I wonder if you could. Interesting. I wonder if we have certain laws against predator hunting as a farm.
Oh, maybe.
Like,
possibly.
I know that if we have like proof of livestock like getting attacked, then we can hunt predators.
Yeah, I believe you can file for, I think it's don't quote me, but I believe it's called a nuisance tag.
I think you're right, yeah.
And like even depending on what kind of business you're operating, geese can fall into that sometimes as well.
Really?
Yeah, it's strange though. From what I remember, you're not actually allowed to harvest meat from a nuisance animal.
No, I don't think so. Oh, I think you have to tag it and then call somebody in. Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
So I'm not, again, super familiar with that, but...
You seem knowledgeable to me.
So definitely don't go out and do any of this.
Yeah, yeah.
So Curtis said it was okay. Checking with your local regulations first.
Yeah, seriously. I think everything we say, you know.
My name is James.
So, go ahead.
No, I think we were going to ask the same question.
What makes you go after, like, hunt the animals that you do hunt? Is it mainly just because you like the food or, like...
Yeah, I would say table fare is first and foremost for me. I definitely, like, I've done some deer hunting. I will be completely transparent and say some unsuccessful deer hunting.
Oh.
I'm not a deer hunter. I've attempted it many times unsuccessfully, but waterfowl is something that I love because, well, I mean, they're kind of just like little flying steaks.
Yeah.
Like, really.
You're, like, pretty much guaranteed to get something.
Yeah, and you don't have to be, like, very quiet, and you don't have to watch your scent or anything like that.
Right, it can be more of, like, a hangout and, like, just being out in nature.
Or social.
Yeah, exactly.
Social.
You can talk, you can laugh, you can have a good time with friends. As long as you're covered and not waving your hands. Yeah, some people bring barbecues into their blinds and boats, cook a little breakfast. I haven't got there yet.
Yet.
Maybe this year, we'll see.
Okay, Mike, I was not going to ask that question, but that was a good question. So I've never been hunting before. And I know Michaela has because she has her license too and she sits with Lauren and stuff. And you obviously do. So I've never done this before. Can you kind of walk us through, like, for people who don't know what it is, like, just like a little start to finish? I know there's like you have to sit there for a while and stuff, but like, can you just kind of walk us through like how you start and then how you finish?
Yeah, for sure. Like on a specific hunt or on like a broader scale?
Whatever you want.
I'm gonna obviously go to waterfowling on this.
Okay, perfect.
Again, that's kind of walk us through my area.
Start to finish.
So we do early morning.
Okay. What's considered early?
So legal shooting light is a half an hour before sunrise. Again, check your local regulations. Do not base it on what I'm saying. But in our area, it's half hour before sunrise is your legal shooting light. So we typically aim to be there before legal shooting light because you want to have your time. So you have to get your, in our case, we do it from a boat with a pop-up blind. So we have our boat, we have to get it tucked way, way back in very, very thick vegetation. We're going to set our decoy spread out on the way in, and that can be a very broad spectrum. So that can be a dozen mallard decoys.
Okay.
That can be six dozen mallard decoys.
Wow.
That can be a mix. We have some wood duck decoys. We have spinning wing decoys. It all depends on the wind, how you set them up as well. Not to get too crazy specific, but another big part of it is definitely calling for sure. That's a very critical one, and knowing when to call and when not to call.
And is that just with experience, or do you learn that from somebody?
I would say if you don't have a mentor, you will pick it up pretty quickly
when you
see birds going the opposite direction while you're calling.
You're like, wait.
Yeah, that's a good sign that they don't like what you're saying.
Yeah,
for sure.
Wow. And so do you have to practice like duck calling? Will they know it's fake? Like, are they smart enough?
There's a little bit of crossover. As long as it, like, some ducks don't always sound as ducky as you would think, believe it or not.
Really?
And even ducks, believe it or not, screw up duck calling sometimes because they got food in their throat.
They get, like, they choke themselves.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So,
clear my throat.
Yeah, it's really, it really just comes with time. You can be, like, a beginner at calling. As long as you're not over calling, you might be successful.
Gotcha.
But the biggest thing is practice, not just in calling, but the biggest thing I would say is shooting.
Really? Okay.
Wing shooting. So we're talking about like your average flight speed of a passing duck is around 40 miles per hour.
Oh, really?
And it goes up from there.
Really?
Yeah. So depending on if they're going into the wind, most of the time, if you're having them come into your decoys, they're going to be landing into the wind.
Okay.
Just logistically, just right. like why you want to land an airplane into wind.
Right.
Wind helps slow you down. So if you're getting a duck going with the wind, that speed can be exponentially greater as well.
Wow.
So
you gotta be ready.
Yeah, you gotta be ready, and you gotta know, you gotta know your gun.
Right.
You gotta know your gun really well. That's not only for like safety of you and those around you, but also like ethics.
Of course. Yeah. Like for the animal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like that branches off to a lot of different things. Like knowing your gun doesn't come down to just going out and shooting clays, but also knowing what specific waterfowl load that you're using. So that would be the shotgun shell that you're using, the pellet size, the velocity, and the choke that you're using, and seeing how. So shotgun pellets, are you familiar at all?
Kind of.
Okay, a little bit. So it shoots a bunch of little pellets out of it, right? So depending on your shot size, it can be bigger or larger.
Okay.
And as the shot size gets larger, your pellet count, so how many of them you have in your shell, is going to decrease.
Oh, okay.
So the smaller your pellet, the more you have of them. So I think, again, don't quote me on this, but I think in like a number two, which is an average larger duck load, you have like 160 pellets.
Whoa.
Roughly. So a lot. So you got to know what those 160 pellets are doing
at
the range that you're going to be shooting it.
Gotcha.
And that's really important for ethics, because if you have big holes in your pattern, you're going to end up having crippled birds that you have to pursue. And obviously you don't want to be doing that. You don't want to be like breaking wings, causing these birds pain.
Right.
You just want to have them dispatched quickly and ethically.
Mm. Yeah. No, that's fair. So that comes with obviously a lot of practice.
Yeah. Practice. That's the only way to do it for sure. The only way to learn how to shoot a duck is to get out there and shoot ducks.
Right.
Because there's nothing quite like them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. That's really interesting. I didn't know there was actually like so much that like the thought process like that went into it, you know what I mean? Like like knowing like what you said, like the velocity of the gun shoots at, and like your distance and the wind, and like I had no idea that that was
and
something
just like
you had
where
to think
you
about.
Set up your blind right, because you
no
know
idea
there's
now
regulations, but also ethically you need to be conscious of where what you're shooting towards, what you're shooting around.
Oh, for sure. And depending on your wind direction and like where it's coming from to hit you, you don't want to have sun rising and shining in your face, obviously, because then you become a shining beacon to the ducks, because there's light illuminating you where you are. And then wind also, there's a lot of different schools of thought on wind. I prefer a crossing wind, because if you think about it logistically, so those birds want to land into the wind, right?
Okay.
So a lot of people like to say that they want the wind at their back so that those birds are decoying towards you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it from a line of sight, this is how I view it anyway. What is behind your decoys? You.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're looking at the decoys, what are they seeing behind?
You.
Yeah.
Maybe you.
Right.
You know, if you're not concealed well, or if you don't see them coming in. With a crosswind, you kind of can eliminate some of that, because again, they're coming across. So what they're looking at is your spread beyond that water or vegetation.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, there's a lot of thought that comes in there, and it really only comes with experience, which I will preface as well. I don't have a mountain of experience.
You sound like you do though.
But I have the passion. So
oh, okay.
I put in the time, you know,
it goes
I
hand
did
in
my
hand.
Research.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So you get your decoy set up, you're calling the ducks, and then the ducks start coming in. What happens? You start shooting them if you have a good shot.
Yep. Yep. So like depending on how they're coming in, if you have decoying birds, that's essentially your best case scenario, because those birds are cupping, they're attempting to slow themselves down.
Mm-hmm.
As they slow themselves down, obviously it gets a little easier,
right?
The slower they get, it's a little easier. And then I can pretty proficient at taking passing shots depending on the bird, and depending on the load I'm using, but
Then if you get a duck, So that's one of the questions. Like, we talked a little bit about ethics, but I want to talk about like, how do you decide to kill or not to kill? And like when you're in that moment, you're tracking it and you're like, okay, now I have to make a decision ethically. Yeah. So can you talk about that decision?
Yeah, for sure. So like identification is one big thing that a lot of people kind of get hung up on when they're getting into waterfowling. I know I did. It's like there's so many different types of ducks, you know, and there's ones that you can't shoot. Very specifically, that's kind of what you want to familiarize yourself with, mm-hmm. is the ones you legally cannot harvest. Mm-hmm. And if you see any patterns, anything that might think, okay, maybe this is not one, don't pull the trigger. Right. There's always going to be more ducks. Believe it or not, there is millions of ducks.
So don't worry.
In North America. So don't worry. There'll always be another one. But again, I was less selective last year. I will be definitely more selective this year in avoiding ones that I didn't particularly like as table fare. Like a lot of people, when they hear merganser, they will kind of scoff at that and be like, oh, you know, that's no good. I forget. There was a bunch of sayings on it. But anyway, so they're a fish eating duck, but there's three different types. There might be more, but in our area anyway that I know of, there's the common merganser, the hooded merganser, and the red-headed merganser, I believe. Oh.
And the commons could be wrong on are that. Dirty, right? They're not
the commons are the ones that I will aiming like not to harvest, essentially.
Right.
Yeah. So if I see that, if I start seeing flocks of those in the area, I'm not going to aim to shoot those because I don't like the taste of them myself. Mm-hmm. Hooded mergansers, again, are in that merganser family. That is the only merganser that I do enjoy as table fare. Mm. But again, like it can be very spotty. Like that's the one thing with farming is you're taking your time, right? And you're feeding your animals what you want for the flavor that you want in the end, right? Where you don't have any... Like this is the good Lord's organic aisle.
Right. Yeah.
So you get what you're given. And unfortunately you can get sometimes like I've even had mallards, which are pretty high on the list of table fare. Like all puddlers are essentially above most divers in most categories. But I've had some mallards that just had a really, really terrible taste to them. Terrible like smell. Like it fills your whole house with a, like it smells like river when you're cooking them. That's a good sign that you're not going to have a good time with that.
Oh
but
no.
Just so smother like them in sauce.
Our chickens, like our birds can get worms very easily. Is that something that like in the wild that can happen?
I'm sure they can get like internal parasites. I'm not 100% familiar with that, but
you've
I know
never gotten a duck with
they can get
worms.
Exterior parasites. Which are really disgusting
gross.
Looking things. Yeah.
And you would just never know. Like obviously
until you shot it.
Exactly. They're like you're talking the plumage of these birds is very, very thick most of the time to stop them, their bodies from actually getting wet. So that's why they can stay on cold water for much longer, right?
Yeah.
So like when you get little tiny bugs and mites all up in there, you'd never know until you literally start to harvest and then it's little eerie
and then you're like please no.
Yeah.
So then what do you just give up, like what do you
you basically just if you're doing it inside a building where you don't want there to be mites, move it exterior to the building for sure is a good first step. They don't, as far as I know, any of the species of mites that inhabit waterfowl don't actually transfer to humans.
Oh, okay.
That was the first time I encountered that was my thing. I was like, are they on me and will they live on me?
Yeah, I'm itchy now.
So I immediately got Google to answer both of those questions and no, they do not.
Okay, that's
good to know.
Yeah.
So in terms of conservation and ethics, they kind of go hand in hand in most conversations. How do you particularly, like, I think Emily might be interested in this question. I know because I also contribute to conservation, but how do you specifically contribute, like monetarily? Do you contribute like in your ethics to conservations? Like how does that work?
Yeah. I mean, monetarily for sure. Like I do some of the Ducks Unlimited stuff. Like they have if you're in Canada and you want a chance to win a firearm, the Ducks Unlimited annual calendar is also a ticket to win a firearm. So they give one away. I think right. it was every week.
I think it was and two every week or something.
Is something crazy, crazy like that. A yeah. lot of guns anyway.
Whoa.
And
they, like, sexy duck posters?
No, no. Actually, there wasn't like even a whole lot of ducks like, in there, believe it or not. Oh. It was, yeah, I was shocked
It comes
by that.
Out like right before Christmas every year. Okay, and gotcha. So now I bought it for Lauren. For a Christmas present last year, and he's like, every year you need to get this for me now.
Yeah, yeah, it's great, right? Because you get a calendar for your office or your home.
No, that's great.
And then you also get that ticket to win, and also your money goes towards preserving wetlands.
That's awesome.
Which is really, really important for sure. Yeah. Wetlands are extremely biodiverse areas, mm-hmm. not just for waterfowl. Actually, again, maybe not a direct quote, but they are some of the most biodiverse areas. Mm-hmm. They can be like attributed almost the same as rainforests.
Wow. Whoa.
Yeah. So
that's
like,
crazy.
Yeah. Like 500 plus different species kind of totally. Use yeah. those in different ways, right? Some for food and mm-hmm. some for shelter. But
and also like buying our tags.
Yeah. Like being a good citizen.
Yeah. Buying your license. You know, yeah. if you're hunting or fishing illegally, that's not good. Really, no, just yeah, like buy really your stop. License. Yeah. Like your money goes, it shouldn't even be a conversation, but it definitely if you're going to go in the outdoors and enjoy what we have, mm-hmm. pay the very small fee that you have yeah. to pay annually. Yeah. And that money goes to a good place. You yeah. know, it goes towards conservation. It goes mm-hmm. towards our area. And really also patrolling our area to catch people who are poaching and doing other illegal things.
Like, have you ever come across that?
I haven't personally come across anyone poaching.
You've just heard stories and stuff.
Yeah, there's definitely cases, you know, where people will keep, you know, too many fish, or they'll keep right. fish above the slot size.
Oh, okay.
Depending on your species. Walleye specifically here, we have a slot size. So there's a minimum and a maximum. So you have to catch between like certain lengths. Again, terrible, but I have it marked on a little ruler in my boat. So I don't have to remember it specifically. It's that's just okay. right there.
Smart.
But yeah, I like catching over slot size, and keeping them obviously isn't good for like breeding population.
Right, right.
And yeah, just like people like fishing for species that aren't open and stuff, that all is really damaging. Like if you pull a bass off of its bed, like where it has a bed would be obviously where it has its eggs.
Okay.
Right.
Like there Thank are small fish. So panfish, bluegill specifically are a big one that will literally come in as soon Aww. As that bass leaves, and it will take eggs from the nest.
Really?
So it can damage the population of
wow.
fish. So that's why when they say, don't fish for bass, just don't fish for bass.
That's what they mean.
Yeah. Give it the month or whatever until it opens
yeah.
and
yeah.
then fish for them.
And like know? As wow. hunters, like that's kind of like the code that we like ethically abide by,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's just like follow the rules and understand the rules are in place.
For
Most
a reason.
Of the rules are in place
yeah. for sure.
A reason,
and,
yeah.
and another big thing is respecting wildlife.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like always, right?
Because it's a privilege to yeah. hunt. It's not a, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, for sure. For so. Sure.
That's really cool. Okay, kind of on a more lighter topic. Not that that was sad, but it was just like, it was like rules.
Yeah.
Can you tell us like a fun or meaningful story of a time that you were hunting or fishing? That anything that comes to mind?
Well, so we have an early goose season here, which I was able to go out for one day last weekend. So I got out, and I can't stress the importance of making sure your seating position
Uh-oh.
Is highly secured, especially when you're going to operate a firearm.
Oh, no.
So I was unfortunately in very uneven terrain on some rocks in a cobbled together blind that was existing on an island. And we had three geese that came into our decoys, and I took my first shot, unfortunately missed that first shot. and I wound up actually on the floor of the blind.
Like it shot you back.
In a heap. Yeah. 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 So, yeah.
Did you get the birds or not?
I did not. No. No. I was, yeah, not fruitful that day.
And if you don't know Curtis, a lot of our listeners will know you, but Curtis is not like a very small man. Like you're
no,
like,
no,
what,
you're
6'3"?
No. Yes. Depending on what time of day. Yeah. 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah, like, you're not, like, a small little guy. No. Like, no, a big heap is, like, there would have been, like, a...
Oh, yeah, there would have been a bang, for sure. Yeah.
I wish I was there for that.
Did your friends see, or, like...
No, they actually didn't even see the geese until pretty much the moment that I shot, and they were just, like, completely quizzical as to why there were no follow-up shots. So for those who don't know, depending on the shotgun you're using, you're limited in your magazine capacity to 2 shells in the magazine, 1 in the gun, so you get 3 shots.
Okay.
So they heard 1 shot and an absence of 2 more.
They're like, what is
and
wrong?
I'm saying, like, these birds were in the ideal position.
Oh, no!
So that when I took that first shot, they had nothing to do because they were in full air brakes mode. So they were essentially a stationary target after that first shot, and I was in a heap.
So do you think if you didn't fall over, you could have got all 3?
I only had 2 shells left, but I could have definitely got 1. Okay. That's all I'll say. I won't be too confident in saying I would get 2, but I mean, they were pretty much stationary targets.
So did you, like, have to sit on the ground for a minute and just, like...
It was, like, stuck in, like, a 3-quarter limbo kind of thing because I was leaned up against the back of the blind, and it was just, yeah, there's nothing I could do but watch them fly away.
Oh, so, no.
Yeah.
So you said you're a little bit of a researcher.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Do you think that, like, this has just changed your daily life, like, getting into waterfowl hunting, getting into, like, really immersing yourself in this world? Like, because do you research all the time? Is it, like, just all-consuming as a sport? Or do you feel like, how has it changed your day-to-day life?
It definitely occupies a very good part of my life, for sure. Like, yeah, like, even in the off-season, we're just, like, kind of chomping at the bit, ready to get at it again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, these last 10 days have been, like, they are brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the coming 10 days till season opens are pretty brutal. Even though early goose is open, unfortunately, I don't have... Your ideal access is going to be field access because this time of year, it's kind of nice weather still. So right. There's a lot of boaters, a lot of kayakers.
Right.
And that's kind of not the ideal scenario to be hunting public water.
Yeah. No, sure.
Yeah. So I don't have access to field hunt anywhere this season. So I'm just kind of letting early goose season pass by. Very slowly,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, just waiting until duck opens. So.
So yeah, just living your life, waiting for it.
Yeah, it's a lot of annoyance to people around me occasionally, specifically because I spend a lot of time practicing my calling just to kind of get better. And the key to that, I would say, for anybody who's looking, maybe their spouse is a little upset that they're making a racket in their home, is anytime you commute.
Oh, in your like car, in the car?
By yeah. yourself. That is an ideal time to do calling because there's no one to annoy but yourself.
Or like the passersby.
Yeah, or I the passersby.
I can just imagine at a stoplight, you're just...
Oh, Lauren yeah, actually,
doesn't get like annoyed per se, but he gets very embarrassed when I practice. Yeah, when I practice my calling.
We
he
actually,
gets second anxiety.
Yeah.
We were going through a construction zone the other day and the guy operating the stop sign, or what would you say, flagger, I guess?
Yeah, like the guy yeah. tells you when to stop
yeah,
or go.
He had yeah. Told us to stop and I started to duck call at him. And he actually enjoyed it quite thoroughly.
Yeah.
He got a good laugh, big smile on his face. So. Some people get annoyed. Other people love it. I'm not sure if he was a hunter or not, but shout out to that guy if you're yeah. listening. I'm glad I made your day.
I don't know what I would have done if I was standing out there.
And we're going to get you to duck call.
Yes.
In just a second.
Please.
Okay.
But before we go and get you to duck call, that'll just, we'll end it once you duck call and then we'll shut it off.
Go out with a bang.
But if you had to stand like on your soapbox and like give... you know, advice or pitch hunting and fishing to like the lifestyle to somebody, what would you say?
That's a good question. I think I already mentioned this in there, but I would just say it is the good Lord's organic isle. It is there. And anyone should take advantage of that and really get out in their community, and make connections to people for sure. It's really important, especially like for conservation. The more people who are aware, the better.
Yeah.
For sure.
No, absolutely. That's good. I would put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah. We should. The good Lord's organic aisle. That's probably going to be the name of this podcast.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to do it quick. So next time we're going to have a vet on as a guest. So come back for that.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, Curtis is going to call us out. So explain your call.
Yeah. First, before
you do it.
Yeah, for sure. So it's a mallard hen call. The reason why I kind of do that is because the spread that I put out is predominantly mallards. And again, so mallards are kind of a universal bird. There's obviously an abundance of them. Other ducks will tend to land with them or around them. So again, they're like a universal decoy. So mallards is it. And it's fun.
And you have a different call than I do, like design.
I do, yeah. I have what they call a cut down call. Shout out to Duck Commander. They make great calls. I use a cut down call, which is essentially back in the day when there was very few duck calls, people used to get them and then they used to cut their soundboards down to make it more ducky, to put it in a certain way, and maybe even a little bit louder. So that's kind of what I prefer, to like ring those like hail calls and high balls out there, you know? So
yeah. And there's two parts to your call, right? Like there's the...
There is, yeah.
Can you explain that?
So there's like, so again, let me just say before I call and continue that I'm not classifying myself as an expert, but I can say the mallards do enjoy it. So at least there's that. So there's feed calling, which is essentially you're mimicking those ducks. Not to put moods or like emotion on an animal, but I would say like they're happy, they're feeding.
And oh, not like a mating call or something?
No,
like
no, they're just call? Like having a good time, you know, maybe they got a bit of a mouthful. Nice, and they're like, yeah, you know. And
that's the one that you can do, Emily.
Oh,
well, yeah, do it.
That one.
Yeah, that's, yeah, you got it. That's essentially what you're doing into the call for sure.
Michaela made me practice.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, quacking in various different forms. But I mean, it really all kind of works. But it just, if you got birds heading into you and they're already committed to your decoys, don't call them. There's no purpose.
No.
Yeah, you might actually scare them off.
Right, they would be like, oh, there's people here. I'm feeling antisocial today.
Yeah, but there's a lot of different... I don't know if I'm getting all the terminology right, but...
It sounds right to me.
But yeah, it's great. And anyone who's like trying to learn calling, I would say there's definitely a point where you have to like see if your call is the right fit for you.
Right.
Mm. I think you experienced that, Michaela, for sure. Because there's some duck calls that I don't know if it's just the person using it and, you know, their mouth structure or what specifically.
I couldn't push enough air through the one that I had. I kept saying, like, my voice is cracking. Chris is like, well, it's not very loud. Like, why would your voice? And then I changed the call and it was literally like, I was doing the same thing that I was doing on the other call, but it was so much better.
Yeah.
So,
interesting. Yeah.
I would definitely recommend like a Duck Commander call. They've been doing it. They, I think, were the original.
Is that like the Duck Dynasty people?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Robertson clan.
Yeah.
But yeah, they make great, great calls.
Is that what yours are?
That is what one of mine is. Oh. Another one is a handmade one that I picked up recently. That's my goose call.
That's cool.
And then the other one's just a whistle. Just a generic whistle. I think that's actually a ripoff of a Duck Commander whistle.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A lot of people replicate that whistle. And unfortunately, I bought a replica and not the actual thing.
Whoopsies.
Sorry, Phil. Apologize.
Way to go.
All right. So let's hear it. So I think you're going to have to like just
back the truck up.
Yeah, should I move the mic away or just stand up?
Yeah, just move the mic away.
Do you feel better if standing? Okay, so wait, which one is this one that you're doing? Or are you only doing one?
So I'll start with a little bit of a feed chuckle and then kind of, sorry, I'm reaching for the mic here.
I love it.
And then kind of just roll into a little bit of a quack.
Okay. That was awesome. Thank you.
All right.
It turned out very clean.
Yes.
It doesn't always sound like that.
Oh, well, Curtis, thank you so much for coming on. We really enjoyed having you, learning about hunting and fishing and your passion behind it. All right. Well, we will see you guys next time. Thanks for listening.
See you then.
Bye.